Today is September 2nd, and I am with Dr. Maureen Sharon in her office at the Albert Einstein College of Medicine for the first of the Pew Scholars in the Biomedical Sciences interviews. So, what I'd like to do is start off with something really simple, like if you could tell me when and where you were born.
I was born August 28th, 1959. At Long Island Jewish Hospital in, I guess, New Hyde Park, Lake Success, Long Island. Uh-huh. But really, I'm a native Brooklynite.
Ah, okay. Where in Brooklyn?
Greenpoint, Brooklyn. But then on my first birthday, we moved to Queens, was considered to be moving east and upwardly mobile.
Ah.
So we moved to Flushing then.
Uh-huh. Okay. Maybe you could tell me just a little bit about your parents and your grandparents.
Everything, anything in particular?
Well, are they were they immigrants from somewhere?
My parents were born in Brooklyn.
In Brooklyn.
Yeah. My grandparents on my mother's side were also born in Brooklyn.
Ah.
It was their parents that were from Italy. So
uh-huh.
on my mother's side, we're of Italian extraction.
Mm-hmm.
My father's side, his mother was originally from Vermont, Irish and English farmers.
Mm-hmm.
And his father was from Montreal, so was French-Canadian.
Mm.
And so my parents grew up in Brooklyn during the time of the Depression.
Mm-hmm.
My mother was the oldest child, and so she had it pretty tough. She had to leave school early and get any kind of work that she could in order to help support the family. My father was the second of four brothers, and his family had it a little bit better in that his father's job was more secure,
mm-hmm.
because he was a building superintendent. So their rent was free.
Uh-huh.
So they didn't have that expense, and people still needed help within the house. So my father's family didn't feel the Depression the same way that my mother's family did. My mother's family lived essentially on potatoes,
mm-hmm.
and home relief clothes and things like that. They both went to high school, and at that time, graduating from high school was considered an achievement. My dad went to a four-year high school, and then after that, essentially took various jobs. He was trained to do mechanical work, plumbing, carpentry, all
mm-hmm.
sorts of general contracting. And my mother went to a commercial high school, and her family, I guess, and many Italian Americans were seamstresses. So they tried to maybe brainwash her that
uh-huh.
that trade would be a good trade, but she hated it. So she went to the commercial high school, got
uh-huh.
her two-year degree, and then went off and really took a bunch of odd jobs, mostly working in factories, because then shortly after that, World War II came around.
Mm-hmm.
I guess with the shortage of men, then there were a lot of jobs in factories that women could take. So my mother worked for Squibb and companies like that, doing piecework, as they called it.
Right.
I guess she had it tough in a lot of ways. At least that's the way it's always been described to my sister and I.
Mm-hmm.
Also because they were a bit of a minority in their neighborhood. people considered, you know, there's always some pecking order that's set up.
Sure.
And she actually was discriminated against from some jobs because she was Italian. She had her best friend who was German and Irish. She went in, interviewed for a job. She was told there were no more openings. And she walked out and said to her friend that, you know, forget about it, it's not worth it. Her friend walks in for the same job, interviews, and they gave it to her. And mm-hmm. both of them had the same exact qualifications, and it was, you know, a job that you just need to be able to breathe and move your hands. It was right. an assembly line worker. And it was a company that was known to have skewed hiring practices. Mm-hmm. So my mother, and that they had some discriminatory practices against Italians. So my mother stood up for what she believed to be right, wrote a letter to Fiorello LaGuardia, mm-hmm. who was half Italian himself.
And he was mayor at the time.
And he was mayor at the time. Mm-hmm. And wrote to the newspaper, wrote a letter to him through the newspaper, and then ultimately she was given a job within that company, and the company was investigated for having skewed hiring uh-huh. practices. So those are my parents. My grandparents, I think they also pretty much were factory workers. I didn't know that. My grandmother's father, I didn't know. He died before I was born. My mother's mother, she worked at a printing press, Fairchild Publications, mm-hmm. for years. And also a lot of the same assembly-type jobs that my mother had. Right. On my father's side, his father could do general contracting work. So mm-hmm. when he wasn't a superintendent, he had a small business with his sons where he did general contracting and plumbing, etc. Mm-hmm. And his mother, I don't think that she worked. I think mm-hmm. she was a housewife by trade.
Which is a lot of work, but you don't get paid.
Yes,
for
well,
it.
she had four uh-huh. sons, and I think that was a full-time job uh-huh. for her. And she also helped out with some of the general buildings mm-hmm. issues. I think mm-hmm. that often the super isn't just, you know, the man. It's the family.
Right.
Everyone yeah. kind of gets, you know, jobs here and there. And I think that's part of what lent the business mm-hmm. that the contracting that my grandfather had with his sons. And, you know, which son was good at carpentry and which one was good at plumbing. My father mm-hmm. was very good at plumbing. Another one was a good carpenter. Another one was a good mason. So uh-huh. between them, I think a lot of it they picked up from having that in their mm-hmm. family.
Right. Did any of them stay in the business? Or
no. I think there was an image that you should get a city or government job because you would have security with that.
Uh-huh.
So one of my father's brothers became a fireman. Another one became a police officer. Mm-hmm. His oldest brother was a mechanic for Eastern Airlines. Mm-hmm. And my father had worked also for Fairchild Publications for many years. And then the company was going to move, I think, to New Jersey or something. And that came, I think, at a bad point in his life. He was midlife. He was in his 40s at the time. And the thought of moving to New Jersey was beyond what my family could deal with. You know, certainly not for that kind of a job. Yeah. Were we going to move out of New York? So he was unemployed for a while.
Wow.
And then he worked under the license of another plumber. So he went back to that trade. And then my mother put the screws in him and said, you have to get a government job or a city job. We need security, because he had put so many years in with Fairchild and essentially no retirement plan, nothing. He was just gone after, I think it was like 15 years. Poof. So she said, no, you have to have something that is stable and secure. So he took the test for the New York City Transit Authority that to be a bus maintainer. Mm-hmm. So he had to do a lot of mechanical work for that. And he got the highest score of everyone that took the test, because they published it in the newspaper. And he, midlife, he was about 45, got his job working for the Transit Authority. Mm-hmm. And I think from the day that he started, he was counting down to retirement. So when Dad hit 65, bingo, right to the 20-year mark.
He was out of there.
He was out. Mm-hmm. He was out with a big smile on his face. But, you know, there was more of a sense of calm, I think, within the household, because the job was stable. Mm-hmm. You know, it was a civil servant's job, and there was a pension at the end. There was a health plan, because we didn't have, when I was a kid, we did not have health insurance, dental. Dental, I remember for sure. Mm-hmm. More dental nightmares because of no coverage then. So
the more things change, the more they stay the same in our society. Huh?
Well, yeah. It's a little sad. Oh.
So what about, how did your parents meet?
At a dance. Church dance. Oh. My mother loved to dance, and my father's brother loved to dance, and he would bring along my dad. My dad, I think, was, you know, he just liked to help out with the church organizations. Mm-hmm. And Mom went for the social activities, and she saw my uncle and thought he was a great dancer, but thought that his brother was good-looking.
Ah.
So she, I guess because they were both good dancers, my uncle and my mother ended up entering dance contests together. So this was during the 50s. Mm-hmm. And they, you know, won a lot of prizes. They dated for a very short period of time because my mother really had her eye on my father. And then shortly, I guess after a brief period of dating my uncle, somehow she managed to switch and date my father. Mm-hmm. Then my dad got into a really bad car accident, you know, on the back roads of Vermont. His family, because his mother was originally from a farm in Vermont, when they were kids, they would go off to the summer to Vermont. Mm-hmm. And so they had city life and farm life, unlike most New York City people. Mm-hmm. So my mother had no concept of farm life and thought that was backwoods, backwards, hicks. And Dad thought it was fresh air, country living, wonderful, and everything. Well, so even when he was older, you know, after their childhood, he would go visit relatives in the Vermont area. Uh-huh. And he was driving on a back road one night, and a big truck just smashed his car, ran it off the road, and yeah, he got hurt really bad. He broke his back. So he was sort of in various states of braces and on his back for a year. And this is shortly after my mother and he started dating. And Mom decided, yeah, he's pretty broken up, but I like this one a lot. So she stuck with him through that period. And then eventually after that, they got married. Right. Yeah. And they were both older. They were I think my dad was 29 and my mom was 32 at the time that they got married. So, you know, they knew what they wanted mm-hmm. at that mm-hmm. at that time. What they weren't, you know, 18 and right. never dated right. anybody else. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, how many kids did they have?
Two. My sister and I.
You and a sister. Okay. And where do you fit in? Are you the older or the younger?
I'm the older. Okay. My mother lost one before me.
Uh-huh.
And then my sister is a year and a half younger than I. So, number two immediately followed number one.
Number one, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, she started late, too, so...
Yeah. And you know, there was a very short period after the miscarriage.
Right.
And then she got pregnant right away for me. But they'd been married... When I arrived, they were married almost 3 years. Mm-hmm. But I guess that's still pretty quick, considering... Mm-hmm.
Okay. So you were born in Brooklyn, you said, and then very quickly you made this upward move
yeah.
to Queens.
Yeah.
Okay. And is that where you grew up?
Yeah. My whole life has been in Flushing.
Mm-hmm.
And I can even go to the point of saying, except for the 3 years that I was a postdoc.
Mm-hmm.
Because now I live in Bayside, right on the outskirts of Flushing.
Mm-hmm.
So except for the 3 years that I was up in the Cambridge area, I've always been, yeah.
Yeah. And one of the things that interests me, because I lived in New York for a brief period, well, several years, but it was a long time ago, is that people... here very often settle into an apartment and stay there their whole lives. Did you live in the same apartment most of the time? Or
my grandmother bought a house
oh.
in Flushing, and it was a two-family house.
Oh,
so that was how my parents left Brooklyn.
Uh-huh.
Because it was a two-family house, they felt that they could have a bigger apartment within a private house that my grandmother owned, mm-hmm. live with my grandmother, and that's how they did it. So mm-hmm. my parents were not homeowners.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't until after my grandmother passed away that my mother inherited a third of the estate and then used that as a down payment to mortgage it. And so my mother turned and said, I think she was in her 60s. Like at 60, now I'm a property owner. That was how, I guess there was a perception between people who owned property and those who rented.
Mm-hmm.
And she felt that, you know, her whole life she rented. And suddenly, at this late stage, now I'm a property owner.
Yeah.
it was always this... Something was always hooked up to uh-huh. owning as opposed to renting.
Right.
And I'm not sure what it really meant, whether she meant it in a good way or a bad way.
Uh-huh.
In some respects, it seemed to be a bit of a snobbery.
Mm-hmm.
In other respects, I think she was envious of
mm-hmm.
it. But...
Mm-hmm.
Now I think she sees it as a burden. She wants to sell the house and move into something small.
Uh-huh. But actually, you grew up in more like a private home then
yeah.
than an apartment.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
Because we walked freely, you know, between
yeah.
our apartment, my grandmother's apartment, the basement... We put a pool in the yard, and so we were in a house. We just
mm-hmm.
weren't the owners of the house.
Right. Okay. So tell me a little bit about your sister. She's a year and a half younger, you said.
Yeah, she's complete opposite of me.
Mm-hmm. as is usually the case.
Physically and otherwise. She's, well, she has a beautiful son who's 10 and a half. She's no longer married. Let's see, my sister hated school. My parents struggled to get her to finish. They sent us to Catholic school, Catholic grammar school. Mm-hmm. And at least they wanted us to go to the end of grammar school within the parochial school system. And part of the reason for that was not because they were adamant about us getting a religious education. It more had to do with what was going on within the New York City school system at the time that I was starting first grade, which was 1965. Suddenly there was this mass busing. That's when this all began. And so they were taking kids from, you know, southern Queens and moving them in. And it was all this racial integration. And it was just a big unknown what was going to happen. So the public school where I had gone to kindergarten was three blocks from our house, was much closer. It wouldn't have cost any money to go there. It was a lot more convenient. But because it was so tense and mysterious what was going to happen, they thought, no, we'll send them to Catholic school. Because my mother went to Catholic school when she was a kid, and it was, I would say, they were strict disciplinarians in those days. And I don't think my mother felt that was appropriate. So she wasn't really dead set on sending us to Catholic school. And my father had gone to public school. So they would have sent us to public school. But then once they made the decision to pay the tuition, go to Catholic school, they figured we would get the religious education, and it was more of a known. So they felt, you're going to graduate from grammar school in the same school that we start you out in. My sister hated the discipline. She hated all of that. I, on the other hand, I think I felt comforted by it. You tell me what the rules are, and this way I know. If I do these things, you know, I'm on track, I'll get my rewards, or at least I'm not going to get in trouble. But she didn't want to know about what, you know, too many rules, too much discipline. She hated the nuns, and there weren't even that many nuns that were teaching us. But she didn't like school at all, and it didn't come easy to her. So I guess that makes it easy to not like something if it's hard for you, right? So my parents encouraged her, just get through eighth grade and then you can go to a public high school. So with her, she always wanted to quit the school and move to the public school. And I think it was even a little hard for her because I was older. And the teachers knew me, they knew my personality, and they knew my academic scores. And I usually was near the top or at the top. And I got along with everybody. My sister was closer to the bottom academically and isn't the easiest person to get along with. So what would happen would be 2 years later, along would come another Sharon child, and they thought, oh, she's going to be just like Maureen. In the meantime, no, she was the exact opposite. She'd be fighting with everyone in the class. She would, you know, not know the answers to anything. She wouldn't be paying attention. She'd be cutting up. And so the teachers were not expecting this. Mm-hmm. So I think that made it harder on her because there had to have been expectations.
Sure.
So when it came to high school, she went to the public high school, did what she had to do. I think she took more or less the non-regents pathway.
Mm-hmm.
So she didn't take algebra or any of that. It was path of least resistance just to get out. And I think my parents just prayed every day that she got a high school diploma.
Mm-hmm.
But to my parents, a high school diploma was a big thing. That was what they always, like, ingrained in us.
Right.
You must graduate high school. That means success.
Mm-hmm.
And I always said, I want to be a doctor. They were looking, what? You can't be in school forever.
Uh-huh.
and you know, that. So what they said was, we'll send you to whatever high school you want to go to. As good a high school as you can get into, we will pay for that. After that, you're on your own.
Mm-hmm.
So I got into a high school in Jamaica Estates. It was an all-girls Catholic high school, and it was academically, it was the top within the Catholic school system. And compared to public schools, it was much better than, let's say, most of the New York City public schools. So mm-hmm. it was Mary Lewis Academy. And like 95% or more of the graduates of that school historically had gone to college.
Mm.
So it really was like a preparation for college.
Mm-hmm.
And my sister said, I do not want to go, not just to any Catholic high school, I really don't want to go to Mary Lewis Academy. I'm thinking, oh, if she went there, boy, she would have it really tough because everything was,
sure.
you know, a bit faster paced. So so in that sense, we were still opposite. What we had in common, we both liked sports.
Mm.
So when we were younger, they started a girls' softball league. My sister and I played in that. We both enjoyed playing volleyball. I played it competitively. She played it intramurally mm-hmm. in the schools that she went to. So after she graduated high school, for her, that was considered the end of the line. She mm-hmm. was, and I kept telling her, you better go to college, Joni. Really, it's essential that you at least have a bachelor's degree. And she thought that I was an academic snob, and because I was in college, that she thought she, you know, I was trying to tell her that she had to go to college. So she wanted to prove it wasn't necessary. She took a string of jobs working, doing sort of bookkeeping,
mm-hmm.
because that's the kind of stuff that she studied in
mm-hmm.
high school,
mm-hmm.
Business machines, adding machines, accounts payable,
mm-hmm.
that
mm-hmm.
kind of stuff, record keeping. So she worked for a number of companies. She wasn't terribly thrilled with the jobs. And again, her personality, she's, you know, not the easiest person to get along with. So every job she had, oh, they're out to get me. You know, this one is, everybody's, you know, fighting with her. And after a while, I turned and I said, have you ever thought that maybe it's you? I mean, every job. And then, you know, oh, you like to, you know, criticize me.
Right.
Oh, no, I'm not criticizing you. I'm just pointing a pattern out. So then I learned, keep your mouth shut and just let her go on and on and on. So I said, you know, Joan, you're really good. You're really physical. Very good at physical stuff. You enjoy sports. Why don't you try going to college and major in physical education? You could be a gym teacher. You could coach you know, softball teams mm-hmm. or volleyball teams, you enjoy that. And that, I think, would become you. And she kind of agreed with that, but she also realized that she would have to take certain math, certain science, mm-hmm. and she didn't have that preparation from the mm-hmm. high school courses that she took. Mm-hmm. So she started out trying to go to Queensborough Community College. Mm-hmm. And what happens is when you're freshman, non-matriculated, bottom of the pile, you know, they want you, you take a math test, you take an English test, and then they put you in all these remedial courses, like pre calculus. So it's mm-hmm. not even yet algebra.
Right.
And so she's taking courses that aren't physical education, nothing to do with physical mm-hmm. education, taking English courses that mm-hmm. she wasn't taking anything that was going to motivate her. Mm-hmm. So it was tough for her to stick with that program. Mm-hmm. So she dropped out. Then she took jobs in department stores in security. And she realized that she kind of liked this because it was a little physical, it kept her attention. Mm-hmm. And she thought, well, maybe we have one cousin who works for the FBI and another one who works for the Secret Service. Maybe something, you know, with criminal justice mm-hmm. would be up, you know, more in her line. Mm-hmm. She applied to John Jay and I guess got on a non-matriculated track there. And again, they started with these remedial courses. Mm-hmm. And again, she got disgusted with the math and the English and not really getting to take anything in criminology. So then she thought, I'm going to become a police officer. Mm-hmm. And she took a course in the neighborhood. Somebody was running that prepared them for the test mm-hmm. and prepared them for the physical exam. Mm-hmm. There was a physical test that they had right. to take. And she exercised like crazy. She studied so hard. She got a great score on both the written test and the physical test. And they called her for, I guess it was the housing, the New York City Housing Police Department, which wasn't necessarily her first pick, but it was the police department. So she was excited about that. And her fiancé at the time said, I do not wish to be married to a policewoman. I don't want you carrying a gun, and I don't want someone potentially shooting you because you're a police person. So she's weighing the pros and cons. Mm-hmm. What do I do? And then ultimately decided that she was not going to take a profession that her to-be husband didn't want her to have. And I would say that was a big mistake because she went back to accounting type jobs, never liking her job, you know, back mm-hmm. to the same rut of, you know, the people that she worked with she didn't like. But she's a tough person to get along with. But I think if you like your job, you view things very differently. Mm-hmm. And so I think that contributed to her, let's say, misery on the job and disgust with what her job was and stuff. So she, I think, how long did she work in that profession? Probably too long, until she had her son. And then about a year or a year and a half after she had my nephew, she went back to work because my brother-in-law had a crummy job. He's a travel agent. No pension, no nothing. All the things that my parents
right.
drilled into our heads uh-huh. from childhood that, mm-hmm. you know, you must have security. You must. But he had a high school diploma. so you can't say she didn't marry a high school graduate. That, you know, my feeling was you got to watch. You can't marry only a high school graduate. So, because he couldn't bring in enough salary, mm-hmm. she had to go back to work. So even though she was disgusted with what you would call her profession, she had to do something. So she went looking all over the place, and at the time, a Sheraton Hotel opened up in downtown Flushing. I think they call it Sheraton East. It's affiliated with LaGuardia Airport. Mm-hmm. And they were hiring security for the hotel.
Oh.
So she went back to her security jobs that she had been mm-hmm. doing. She still works at the Sheraton Hotel doing security mm-hmm. for them. I would say she's... you know, she has complaints. It's not as bad as when she was doing accounting.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my sister.
That's your sister.
And, you know, she doesn't... I keep telling her, you have to tell your son, you know, minimally, he has to go to college. She's still stubborn as could be. If he wants to, that's his business. I said, well, I think at least you should be telling him that, encouraging him mm-hmm. that he should be thinking about this, thinking about what he likes and what kinds of things he would major in college. And she still thinks I'm an academic snob. So even though she and her ex-husband have, I think, suffered and been burned multiple times because of the degree of education that they have, still mm-hmm. does not want to admit that that's something that her son should be motivated towards.
Mm-hmm.
So I spend my time, you know, trying to get the kid to think about school in a positive way and
mm-hmm.
try and be futuristic about it. Mm-hmm. Hopefully he'll see the college is the bare minimum.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's go back just a little bit to your own school experiences. And you said you went to kindergarten and public school, right? And did you... I'm trying to think if people went to preschool when you were a kid.
Was back in those days, no.
No preschool.
Mothers didn't work. It was rare.
Okay. So kindergarten was your first school experience, and as you mentioned, it was in the neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
Did you like it?
Yeah.
You were happy to go to school?
There was nothing not to like. It was play.
Uh-huh.
Now kindergarten is
like
at least
now.
First or second grade. But... no, it was great. Mm-hmm. All my friends from the street mm-hmm. were in my class.
Mm-hmm.
And then you met new people.
Mm-hmm.
What was not to like?
Okay.
You got to paint. It was all play.
Mm-hmm.
Sing. Lovely. Okay.
So did you mind being taken out of that school to go to Catholic school, even
no.
though your friends... probably stayed there, or did many
oh, no.
of them go
it
with
was,
you?
It was almost a unanimous decision.
Oh, really?
I don't know if the parents spoke
uh-huh.
to each other about it, or maybe it was just such an obvious controversy mm-hmm. at the time that it was almost not a decision.
Mm-hmm.
So the only kids on the block that didn't go to St. Anne's and stayed at PS 120 were the non-Catholic kids.
Mm-hmm.
And they were the minority.
Now, was there any because I actually remember this period of time being a bit older than you are, was for your parents and for the neighborhood, was this only about education, or was there an element of not wanting you to go to school with black kids or to racially mixed?
I don't think I haven't discussed it with my parents. Mm-hmm. I think it was not even the fact that they were black kids. I think it was just such an unknown that they didn't know if order was going to be, if it was going to be chaotic in the classroom or on the streets, even with the buses coming in, how this was going to be. I don't think my parents, I ever viewed them as being prejudiced. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't even the issue that they were black. I think at that age it would have hit me and probably stayed with me if it was if it were a racial thing. It seemed to be such, I think it was more like, this is too liberal. What's going on? And and my parents are conservative. And I think they viewed it as such a liberal act that they didn't want to participate in it. We could have gone, I could have gone to first grade, and if they didn't like it, they could have yanked me and moved me to the Catholic school. But I have a feeling that it was just such a part of the political air, and coming from, although we're my parents are not, let's say, conservative Republican. You know, they're I would say, you know, dyed-in-the-wool Democrats. You know, they believe that, you know, everybody has a right to things, and you know, everything should be fair for everyone, irrespective of how much they earn. But they're at the right end. You know, so they're conservative in their ways, but let's say liberal in how they would, how they view who can be elected and who deserves things. So I think that that movement at the time was just viewed by many people as being too liberal and too much of an unknown. And I guess for the education of your children, just wasn't worth risking.
Okay. So when you started first grade, what did you particularly like about school? Because you said you liked it. What was it?
I was one of those kids. If I was sick, I went to school. I had like perfect attendance all the time. I just enjoyed learning. I think also the social aspect, you know, that you got to be with other kids, and I just liked it.
You just liked it.
Yeah.
Were there any special teachers that sort of stood out in your mind from that period?
Oh, we had one. Well, every so often we had, you know, nice ones that, you know, one, my fourth grade teacher used to sing this song to us. Actually, she would say it when she was threatening you.
Oh, really?
Would you like to swing on a star? Do you know?
Yeah, sure. and because then, she was going to toss you out the window, or
well,
what?
Well, I think it was, you know, if you were cutting up, if somebody was cutting up, so she would just start singing, "Would you like to swing on a star?" And then she would, in the spirit of the honeymooners, she would go to the moon, Alice. I used to think that was so hysterical that she used to do that. And, you know, I was the kind of kid, I did what I was told. Mm-hmm. But every so often, you know, because I think I knew because I was, you know, an A student, mm-hmm. that there was a little leeway, mm-hmm. in the system. So if I would be yakking in the class, you know, I'd get a look where another kid would get yelled at flat out, you, stop, me, I would just get a look. Uh-huh. And then, of course, you know, you got to test it a little bit more.
Sure.
And so I would push a little bit more until then, oops, stand in the corner. Uh-huh. You know? And then I'd be there for like 5 minutes, raise my hand. Was that enough? You know? Uh-huh. Okay, you can sit now. But who else? Oh, we had a teacher in the 7th grade. Mm-hmm. She was a hippie, perceived as being a hippie. She used to tell us all these stories. She was, I guess, a teenager, early 20s. She went to college in the 60s, the late 60s. Mm-hmm. So she had long, long hair. And she rented an apartment with 2 men. And she told us this.
Oh, scandalous.
Was scandalous. This was 1970, 70, 71.
Let me just turn the tape over.